Now we do part four, the gospel. The gospel is going to talk about the definitive end of the world, which is the glorious arrival of Jesus Christ. However, we're, as far as we know, we're only anticipating that. The Lord will come. He will come in His Word. He will come in the brethren. He will come in a special way in the Eucharist. And it'll be, as the church celebrates this, not just any old Sunday or any old Mass. This will be the coming of Christ to His people. So now we're going to begin. And the gospel for this year is from Luke. And it's chapter 21, verses, well, we do 25 to 36, but we skip between 29 and 33, which is a parable about the fig tree. They often do that for us so that it doesn't get too long. Well, I won't tell you what I think. I think we could just go ahead and do it. Anyway, now we're going to have this notion. The Lord is going to be talking, you see. I want to just do a little bit here from Luke to give you an idea of what we're doing here. You see, it's very interesting the way that Luke organizes his material. The first part of this section is the widow with just two little coins, and she puts them in the temple treasury. And Jesus said, I tell you, that woman did more than everybody else. Remember that, right? Right after that, then, well, some people were speaking about how the temple was adorned with, because he's right in the temple, okay? He says, all that you see here, the days will come when there will not be left a stone upon another stone that will not be thrown down. He's prophesying the end of the temple. Now, he prophesied obliquely, as where John puts this is in chapter 2, when he cleanses the temple in the very early part of his ministry. And everybody's furious at him. By what sign do you show us you have authority to do this? He said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I'll build it up again. Now, we have this same word here in the Synoptics, okay? Well, some people were speaking about how the temple was adorned with costly stones and votive offerings. He said, all that you see here, the days will come when there will not be left a stone upon another stone that will not be thrown down. He's telling them. It took, I forgot now what it was. By the time they finished the whole temple, it was 60-some-odd years. They weren't quite finished when it was destroyed. The finishing touch is still going on, but it was just destroyed. And cruelly destroyed. And never rebuilt. You go there to Jerusalem now, you go look at the site of the temple, there's a mosque. There, right there, on the site of the temple. Very beautiful building. It was done by Byzantine artists, Christians for the most part, but you know, they're workmen and they're artists and they're getting paid, so they do it. Okay. So they asked him, Teacher, when will this happen? And what sign will there be that all these things are going to happen? You see? And that's what then he goes on to say. See that you be not deceived, for many will come in my name, saying, I am he, and the time has come. Do not follow them. When you hear of wars and insurrection, do not be terrified, for such things must happen first, but it will not immediately be the end. This is this eschatological expectation we see all around us. The world, I mean, you know, China and Russia and the U.S. and the Muslims and the Catholics and the, you know, Is it the end of the world? Well, he said, don't be deceived, okay? There'll be a nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be powerful earthquakes, famines, and plagues, and mighty signs will come from the sky. He said, you see, but don't get nervous yet. You see, then he starts, I'm going to skip so we get to where the text begins in verse, the gospel text, in verse 25. This Bible, the numbers are so small, I can't see where this English text starts. Okay. There will be signs in the sun, the moon, and the stars. Okay? And on earth, nations will be in dismay, perplexed, or terrified, by the roaring of the sea and the waves. People will die of fright in anticipation of what is coming upon the world. For the powers of heaven will be shaken. This is pretty grim. What's going to cause this shaking of the whole world? Sin. Rebellion against God. God won't stop the rebellion. He can only do that by forcing people's will. He's going to send signs of warning and prophets, as he's already doing, whether this is the moment for an eschatological moment, not the eschatological moment, but a moment in which all the factors which will make that are present in an anticipated way. I do think that's true. I think you can see that, right? There'll be signs in the sun, the moon, and the stars, and on earth, nations will be in dismay, perplexed by the roaring of the sea and the waves. How many tidal waves? How many earthquakes? How many, you know? People will die of fright in anticipation of what is coming upon the world. For the powers of the heavens will be shaken. That probably means the stars. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power, with great glory. The Son of Man, that's Jesus, right? Now that is referring to a text in the book of Daniel. Okay? This is where this title, which our Lord takes to himself, this is where it gets its intelligibility. The court was convened and the books were opened. I watched then from the first of the arrogant words which the horn had spoken until the beast was slain and his body destroyed and thrown into the burning fire. As for the other beasts, their dominion was taken away, but they were granted a prolongation of life for a time and a season. As the visions during the night continued, I saw, and now we start, I saw coming with the clouds of heaven one like a son of man, a son of man, a child of humanity, a quintessential human being, all of humanity in its best, concentrated, however you want to, a figure, a person. But he's the Son of Man. He embodies humanity. And he's a figure, you see? Not an imaginative figure, but a person. Okay? Now, when he reached the Ancient of Days, and the text that I'm not reading because we don't have time, but you can look at it. I'm in chapter 7 of the book of Daniel, and where all these images are coming from, you see? I did read it for you, at least part of it. But if you read chapter 7, you'll see it. So this one, like a son of man, when he reached the Ancient of Days, okay, and was presented before him, you see. Now, of course, our gospel text is in Greek, but it's translating a text in Aramaic and Hebrew. He received dominion, splendor, and kingship, and all nations, peoples, and tongues will serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that shall not pass away. His kingdom, one that shall not be destroyed. It's going to be definitive. This moment, you see? Now, the prophecy goes on, you see? Because the text says, people will die of fright. Powers of heaven will be shaken. Then they will see this Son of Man coming on a cloud with power and great glory. Now, what Jesus tells us is, but when these signs begin to happen, stand erect and raise your heads, because your redemption is at hand. Is that going to bother us? Okay. Then, the text goes on, you see, to talk about these four great beasts. And then, I watched the horn that he's just made war against the holy ones and was victorious until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was pronounced in favor of the holy ones of the Most High. And the time arrived for the holy ones to possess the kingdom. In other words, this Son of Man embodies in himself all these holy ones, the new people of God, you see? And they are the ones who finally kingship under shall be given to the people of the holy ones of the Most High. Finally, this definitive conferring of the kingdom is given. That's the church. That's the people of God. And that's what's happening. But there will come a time when it will end. Remember, I talked about this definitive moment being the quality, the eschatological moment, the qualities of it, the factors of it, being present before they are present in a definitive way. That's the eschatological anticipation. We're seeing, you know, with wars and rumors of wars and people and cosmic disturbances and all the rest. Is it the end? Probably not, but it's the anticipation of the end. The factors are present, okay? Now, this is the most amazing part. The Son of Man has received all this, and now it says, the kingdoms under heaven shall be given to the people of the holy ones of the Most High, whose kingship shall be an everlasting kingship, whom all dominions shall serve and obey. This one, like the Son of Man, now, you see, embodies the people of the Most High God. So it's those who are joined to this one, like a Son of Man, who now, along with the Son of Man, which we just read about, how he received the dominion and power, now is given to all the holy ones, because they're joined to him. This is a very powerful prophecy, and it's why our Lord continually calls himself the Son of Man. Are you the Son of Man? Yes, I'm the Son of Man. I am the quintessential man, but I am also the one in and whom the holy ones will receive their kingdom. Now, our Lord gives advice. I only have a moment, but you can read it yourself. Beware that your hearts do not become drowsy from carousing and drunkenness and the anxieties of daily life, and that day catch you by surprise like a trap. For the day will assault everyone who lives on the face of the earth. Be vigilant at all times and pray that you have the strength to escape the tribulations that are imminent and to stand before the Son of Man. That's what we do at Advent. And in this first Sunday, the warning set out for us. Because there will be a sacramental, and I don't mean that in a make-believe sense, of this moment when we celebrate Christmas. When we're at the liturgy, the Son of Man is present in the Eucharist, but he's present in a new way. There's a new power as we celebrate this feast.